What's up? Welcome to NExpress, the Nintendo show of GoombaStomp.com. It's a two-man show this week. I'm Tim Mason. With me is Patrick Murphy.
What's up, Tim? It's another two-man show. We've done one or two of these this year. And I don't know, I kind of, not that I like this format better, but it can be sometimes an engaging format just to have two people going back and forth.
You can get the full thoughts of two people as opposed to the partial thoughts of three to four.
Yeah, I think three is actually perfect. Four can sometimes be too much, depending on how much there is to cover on a certain subject. But
well, I think the best example we could give of that exact same statement, Patrick, would be that four houses is maybe too many, like Gryffindor, Ravenclaw, Slytherin. Boom, done. Hufflepuff's a joke. Sorry if you like Hufflepuff. You were always a joke. But you've got something like Fire Emblem Three Houses, and maybe is that the magic formula, Patrick? Is that it?
I think three is a magic formula. I mean, after all, there's no such thing as the Quad Force, right? So
exactly,
yeah.
Three pieces.
If you want to talk magic, and look, I know. All right, so we did a few weeks ago. GoombaStomp's anime editor and I, he's a big Fire Emblem guy, as a Fire Emblem series veteran, has played almost all of them. And we did a early review of Fire Emblem Three Houses where we were both about maybe 20 hours in or so, and we just discussed everything up until that point, right? Like, we hadn't hit any major plot points, we didn't do any sort of spoilers, and I'm not going to do any spoilers today. I just don't honestly think, like, Fire Emblem, a lot of this game is about the characters and the story and the plot points, even though, well, I'll get into it. But so I'm not going to do any spoilers. I'll just sort of, having now played the game for, I think I've got 90 hours in now, Tim. So I have beat the game.
Like how?
So what's funny is, so the producer of the game, I believe he's one of the producers, came out before the game came out. He said that it would take 80 hours for a playthrough and 200 hours to play through every single house. So 80 hours for a single playthrough. And he said that's if you're going to see everything that a single playthrough has to offer. Well, I finished my initial playthrough of the Black Eagles 80 hours and 14 minutes.
Oh my gosh.
And I saw, I think I pretty much did everything. I unlocked every support conversation that I could. I recruited as many people as I could, based on my understanding of how the game worked, which now in my second playthrough is a lot more refined. I know exactly what I'm doing, and I think I should be able to recruit a lot more people. But yeah, anyway, so he was spot on, 80 hours. Kind of funny. And I saw everything. I did a lot of battles, and yeah. So I am prepared to give a final review. Did my initial enthusiasm maintain throughout the entire game?
Yeah, I cannot wait to talk to you about this because I have kind of sworn off Fire Emblem, but I keep hearing things about this one, and I'm so intrigued, so I cannot wait to pick your brain about this. We also have an indie direct that occurred 2 days ago on the 19th, I believe, maybe it was the 18th, having trouble remembering. Either way, Nintendo showed off a bunch of new indie games coming to the Switch, including some pretty big hits, so I'm excited to talk about that in our main segment. And then we're going to wrap up the show with a discussion, I guess a review, of The Sinking City, the Lovecraftian title now on the Switch as well, that I reviewed for the site about a month ago, maybe longer. We have just had to push it back and push it back and push it back because there's been so much to talk about and because I've been MIA one too many times the last month. So, yeah, cannot wait for this show. Why don't we get rolling if you're all set with Fire Emblem Three Houses? Let's hear what you have to say, Patrick.
All right, so I am all set. All right, I guess you could probably, just by virtue of the fact that I've already started a second playthrough, I think I alluded to that, I think you could say that my enthusiasm maintained. I immediately started a second playthrough right after I beat it. In fact, I was up till 3 in the morning beating it because I was so close. I thought, you know what, I'm just going to go through with this. So, Fire Emblem Three Houses. Well, I think I pretty much detailed before what I thought of the game's mechanics and the school, the monastery and walking around and recruiting all the characters. All that stuff is very fun. And I was surprised, like I said before, I was shocked actually at how much I enjoyed talking to everybody and doing all the little things that I thought were going to be too tedious and or maybe even overwhelming as far as, doing the instruction to up character stats and finding lost items and figuring out who likes what gifts and who doesn't, and recruiting people and choir practice and, juggling all these things, right? Giving students advice and getting bonus points. There's teacher points and there's skill points and there's all sorts of points. There's points that you've got to raise. I thought that was all going to be overwhelming as a Fire Emblem rookie, which is essentially what I am. I played about, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours of Awakening, and then I gave up. So I consider myself a rookie, unless you count Fire Emblem Heroes, which I probably put like 300 hours into.
I endorse that decision. I really like Heroes. At one point, I think I said that every Fire Emblem should play more like Heroes. Just quick, concise, to the point battles with little fluff, but maybe I was wrong.
So I think, I mean, this ended up being far exceeded any expectations I had. I was actually a little wary going to this game. I knew I was going to get it because I really wanted to give Fire Emblem a decent go. And this game just hooked me instantly. Now, it wasn't so much the story that hooked me, and right up through to the end, I think the story's confusing. It also comes at you piecemeal. And I think you actually have to play all three houses to get the full picture of what's going on, because there were plenty of times where a character would come in later in the game and say something that about an event that I had no idea what they were really talking about. And keep in mind, I talked to everybody. Now, I didn't read there's history books in the library that offer you like this background, detailed background of the history of the land. I didn't read all of those, granted, but I might one day. But anyway, like as far as the main story, I really only sort of understood what was going on. I mean, there were some twists and turns that I got, but then there were some periphery things that I just didn't understand. I don't think you get the full picture playing through just one house. I think you get enough of a picture to sort of get what's going on, but you don't. There are going to be a lot of holes in that plot
Yeah,
that
and not to generalize, but it is a JRPG, which do have a tendency to be batty.
Oh yeah, it's baddie. And as everybody knows, I don't really care about story anyway. So, did the story of Fire Emblem Three Houses hook me? No. Not in the slightest. And if that was all it had to offer and just some RPG stuff, I probably wouldn't be so glowing about all of this. But what I was shocked about wasn't sort of the story, but the characters, because the conversations that these characters have, all the support conversations that Fire Emblem fans know so well, this is what hooked me. Like these people, I really started to, as you peel back the layers of these characters, they start to become very, very interesting. At first, they all seem like just general archetypes of typical RPG, JRPG characters, right? And until you start talking with them more, and there are some funny backgrounds, there are some dark backgrounds that are like, ugh. And you realize some people's motivations for how they act, the facades that they're all kind of putting on. And again, I'm not spoiling anything here. Everybody knows there's a time skip later in the game, so Nintendo revealed that themselves before the game even came out. But after the time skip and everybody's grown up a little bit, like you see that even more. Like there's some serious stuff going on here, and there's some serious issues that some of these people have to deal with. And I found it very compelling from a soap opera kind of way. That's kind of how I would relate this game. The story is meaningless to me, but the soap opera aspect of the characters kept me really hooked. Which is something I never thought I would happen. So it's not the main thread that keeps me hooked. It's coming back to see more and more about the personal interactions between these characters and the other characters, or this, certain characters and you and the professor who you play. So a lot of times these little side interactions between two characters who I have no control over, I found those to be very, very interesting. And by the end, there's lots of different results that can happen, I get the feeling. Like I got my results, but I feel like if things had played out differently, there are some sort of epilogues, like if you've ever seen American Graffiti, it's like, oh, such and such went on to go fight in the Vietnam War and he was killed in action. Or, such and such became a journalist in Canada. That was the Richard Dreyfuss character. So if you've or Animal House obviously has joke ones of those. So if you've seen, there is an epilogue in this game, and it kind of tells you what how people did after the main conflict of the game. And I have a feeling that those can alter. And I enjoyed seeing That kind of stuff. The stuff that had nothing to do with the main thread. Yeah, we went through this whole big thing, fine. But it was these side stories and how these characters grew with each other that really, really hooked me. And I'm shocked by this. And I'm shocked even still as I'm saying it, how much I enjoyed this. I don't think it tells a great story. I think it tells great characters.
Which is kind of incredible. And that's kind of what they were demonstrating in the trailers alone, right? That seemed to be the center of the game as you start out this professor and you're working with these kids. And then by the end, all these kids are in conflict with one another. And it seemed I think soap opera is pretty on point, but in a, like a more respectable scheme, kind of like Star Wars is technically a space opera, but it works a little bit better than the typical soap opera fare. That's what this seemed like, this big conflict between individuals. And so I'm glad that that wasn't just a really, really well created trailer, that that's actually what the game has to offer.
It does. It does in spades. And it hooked me so much that I've made like decisions on how I want this story to unfold because you have a lot of control over this. You can access this part of the story as much or as little as you want. And we'll get to the battles in a little bit because I do have some things to say. Like I don't want to go over too much of what I talked about in that thing, that Fire Emblem episode that we did. So instead, I want to kind of like talk about how it works as a whole. And I would say all the way up to the end, these interpersonal interactions were gold. Like they just kept me hooked, and it made me immediately want to start in a new house to see how those people interacted, not just with each other within their own house, but how they interacted with the characters from my own house, who I am going to try to now recruit into this house. I'm going to save characters from the last house that I'm going to play until later. I don't want to recruit any of them necessarily right now because I want those supports to be fresh and everything like that. I'm really being picky about who I want to mix, and it actually made me look and see who has, because you can check this, which is very convenient, very user-friendly. You can check to see who has support conversations with who else, including in other houses. So that gives you a good idea of who you might want to recruit because there might be some really good interactions between these people. You know, if somebody only has up to a B support story, but another person has an A, possibly even further, like you might want to go try to recruit that person that has the A conversations with one of your house members because you're likely to encounter something more interesting. But there's all sorts of people to interact with, and yes, there's as we talked about, there's a little bit of the flirty stuff and the romance. It's really a minor part of it. Yes, I did get married in the end. You get to pick who, you know, as long as you've established a support level with everybody. And I maxed out my support levels with everybody, so I had like I could have chosen like eight different people. But I already knew early on who I was gonna go with. Spoiler alert, it was Petra, the foreigner girl. I always had a thing for foreigners, Tim. No.
Okay, makes sense.
No, it was like I found her interactions to be really funny because her English was very charmingly sort of broken. Yeah, so you can do that stuff, but that's also kind of like epilogue stuff. So it's not really important in any way. It didn't really offer anything in the end, honestly, except for rounding out my own personal journey through this game. Yeah, so that was all fantastic. I think I can't wait to you know sort of work my way through the new thing. The new house I'm doing the Blue Lions now. I did Black Eagles first, and I can already tell there's you're approaching you're. Early on, you're doing a lot of the same battles, right? So there's the school portion, and then there's the post time skip portion. And I'm not going to spoil anything for anybody, but once the conflict actually breaks out, there are several perspectives. So post time skip, I have a feeling, and I'm pretty sure about this, that your storyline's going to differ greatly from house to house. Pre time skip, when you're in the school, you go through the same battles. But you are approaching them because you're with a different house, you're approaching them with different people, and they're approaching it from a different perspective. And they have different things to say about everything. And they might reveal more of their past. They might have a history with some of these, you know, subjects that these battles are over. So it's still interesting enough, even though I'm doing the same battles. I think I'm about 9 hours into the Blue Lions. I'm doing some of the same battles, but I am learning more things. And sometimes they're on. You know, I think you're gonna. I feel like there's some different maps too, with the new house. So that also keeps things interesting. So yeah, story wise, whatever. Character wise, fantastic. And it's the little things you really get involved in the school. We talked about this in the Fire Emblem podcast, but I'm going to say it for your benefit anyway, in case you're wondering. You really do. It really got me caught up in doing everything. I never skipped out on teaching. I never auto did anything. I did everything manually. I enjoy doing everything manually. I won't go into it too much, but I think anybody wants a detailed description. Matthew and I talked about this a lot on the Fire Emblem podcast from a couple of weeks ago. So I just think that they did a fantastic job creating this school environment and getting you sucked in. Now, that being said, because this is a review of the full game, I will say this, the second half of the game is slightly weaker. Slightly, I say. On the character interaction front. Because I don't think this will be spoiling too much, but conflict has broken out and not everybody's at the school anymore.
Yeah, so they're not all interacting anymore.
Yeah, so I didn't have, 30 people to run around and talk to every time I wanted to explore the monastery. And then it just sort of became, it was lessened by quite a bit. So that there weren't as many activities. The school didn't feel quite as interesting in the second half of the game as it did in the first half of the game. But what happens is the battles kind of ramp up and the stakes get raised, and you still have all those, you're still unlocking support conversations and everything like that. But I felt like at least the second half of the game did suffer a little bit in that. Did not really decrease my enjoyment of this because, again, now we can talk, like, the battles started to get far more interesting, I think. And things happen in the battles. You encounter people, right? You encounter people who you knew at the school. And so that makes things very interesting. So the battling is, having gone through the game, this I went through on casual mode, and I went through on normal difficulty. So meaning I couldn't have people that died. If they would have been killed, they would have just retreated. I went through the whole game as a rookie, and nobody I did have a couple of deaths because I was reckless, but you also have a rewind feature built in, and they have that on classic mode too. So it's not like the rewind is just for casual. The rewind is for classic. You have chances, a limited number of chances to rewind decisions that you made in battle, and you can rewind all the way back to the beginning if you want to. So there were a couple moments where I tested things out recklessly, and a character, was forced to retreat. I just rewound. I never completed a battle that way. I would rewind and I'd make different decisions. So on normal mode, I think if you're worried as a Fire Emblem rookie about is this game going to be too hard, it is not. If you, especially if you partake in all the auxiliary battles and the paralogues, you will gain plenty enough levels to get through this. And if you choose, if you're still finding it hard, there are on normal mode you can really grind if you want to. There are certain auxiliary battles you can replay over and over and over again. Some of them require activity points and you can't replay those, but others you can just keep doing over and over again. I don't think you'll have to. I found this game to be pretty easy, and my guys towards the end could march in and destroy. Now I had to be somewhat careful. The last couple of fights are challenging, to be sure. I was never worried. But I played it nice and conservative, and I went through no problem. Nobody got killed, all the way up through the last fight. So yeah, I don't think rookies need to be worried about difficulty in this. The normal difficulty is going to be fine. If you're a series veteran, maybe you want to start out on the harder difficulty. I don't know, or don't do so many of the auxiliary battles and just try to go through the battles, the story battles as they come. That will give you more difficulty. But if you play through the auxiliary stuff, you will level up. And if you're smart about it, you'll level up in a balanced way, and all of your characters will be just beasts by the end. If you're keeping up with classes, changing their classes and upgrading those as well, so you'll have plenty of just absolute warrior beasts by the end of this thing.
Yeah, that's kind of how the past games went as well. Awakening, you definitely benefited from making relationships and then having children, and then you could basically breed the perfect warriors, or a couple of characters became absolute beasts by the end of it. And it was like this whole meta game of like, oh, if I marry this person and this person, I can get this trait and this trait of those characters, or it'll create this new trait. So by the end, you have like Pegasus Knights who could kill someone and then get an additional turn or extra movement. And it was kind of like, it was almost tiring by the end because you had to do so much work to get all these super babies. But once you had all the super babies, the game got so much easier, and it was like the way to play it.
Yeah, that factor
So
is eliminated from this, so you won't be making any children.
that I kind of love that. It got tiring by the end.
You won't have to do it. So you will. You can partake in class changes. They're just exams, and you get certifications. But honestly, if the characters will kind of guide you into which class they sort of belong in. Now you can tweak that all you want. I kind of just followed people's natural tendencies, and sometimes I would, if they came to me and they said, "Hey, I'd like to go into this," I would weigh that. How do I want them to be? What do I want them to turn into? But generally, when you have class certifications require exams, and there's no guarantee with some of these things that your character will pass and turn into that class. It'll actually show you a percentage, what the odds are that your character will pass the test. Now you can get that up to 100%, in which case you will pass the test. There's no worries about it. If you're playing it, again, if you're a rookie and you play all the auxiliary battles and you level your characters up, you will be able to turn them into a class that is just, like if you'll have cavalry guys that are just awesome, right? Then do exactly what you said. They'll be able to go up and attack, and then they'll be able to make an extra move afterwards. And that's all done with classes now, and so these characters will become that. I didn't find it to be tedious at all. It's very logical, the progression of everything. You won't have to work to achieve these classes. You just have to play the game. And now, if you wanted to switch them into another class after you've upgraded them to a certain class, yeah, you'll have to pay more attention. You'll have to guide them in a certain way and up their skill stats to achieve a certain thing. Like if I wanted, my archers to suddenly be riding a Pegasus, then I have to manually upgrade their flight, like their Pegasus riding abilities. So, because that's not something that they would normally think about doing, but you can certainly create that. Or, if I wanted my archer to ride a horse, I would have to upgrade their riding ability manually. And so you
Okay.
can wield that, and you can guide them into certain things like that. Like once you've got their archer skills all the way maxed out, and you want them to become a riding archer, which is just their range is incredible. Then, a riding sniper,
Yeah,
then yeah,
seriously.
then they're awesome, right? Like, then they're amazing. So there's certainly loads of customization. I pretty much followed what the character's natural tendencies were. There was an early on moment where I had a character named Dorothea, and she is, by her natural stats, she starts out with a sword and she uses magic. And I was like, oh, cool. Well, I'm gonna upgrade her into this class that uses swords and magic. And I kept using the sword. I upgraded her into class actually that ended up just using sword and couldn't use magic. And I thought, well, she started out with a sword. She must be perfectly capable. I'm going to turn her into a sword person. Well, her strength was awful. And I eventually figured out she was useless in battle. And I was wondering why, because I'm a rookie. And I was like, why is it that she's so much weaker than everybody else using a sword, but she's the same level as them? And then I finally pay attention to the stats. Well, naturally, she's just not very strong. That's not where her gifts lie. Her gifts lie in magic. So I quickly changed her over so that she could be a primary magic user. And then boom, she took off like a rocket. All of a sudden, she was super useful to my party. Yeah, so you have to pay attention to their natural tendencies. If somebody has limited strength stat, you probably don't want them to be a brawler of some sort. Like, they're just not gonna. You can do it. You can turn them into that if you want to, but they're not gonna be super effective at it. But yeah, there's room for tons of customization. And as the battles go on, they definitely, I think, get more interesting and they get more challenging. Challenging to a certain extent, though. Again, if you've done this, you'll be able to. If you've done all the battles, the auxiliary stuff, you'll be able to get through this pretty easy.
Okay. So my next question would be, you've played through one house. Does the next house that you started up, you said you're about 10 hours in, 9
Roughly.
hours in?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
So is it as engaging as the first house? Did you pick the house that seemed the most engaging right off the bat, and now you're like, well, this house is less exciting? Or do all the houses kind of hold the same weight and are equally engaging, would you say?
Okay, so it was hard for me to remember what the Black Eagles were like when I first started them, because 80 hours later, you've grown so close to these characters and they've all become so interesting that you're like, well, they must have been interesting all along. But I do remember thinking early on, within like the first 5 hours, that everybody's very cookie cutter, even in the Black Eagles. Like they had some tendencies, but they didn't start getting interesting until the game progresses and it slowly unfolds, right? So that's the way I feel about the blue lines right now. They're kind of cookie cutter, but I also know things are probably going to get really interesting, and I'm starting to see subtle hints of that in some of the characters. The reason I picked the Blue Lions after the Black Eagles was because certain things transpire in the Black Eagles campaign, post-Timeskip campaign, that made me think that the Blue Lions might have an interesting perspective on this whole conflict. So I wanted to see what that was first. I actually think that the Golden Deer probably have more interesting characters to start with, and I was tempted to pick them the first time through, but I'm going to save them now for last. Just because I wanted to see, I was intrigued by something that happens during the Black Eagles playthrough, and so now I want to see how that plays out. So about 10 hours in, they're starting to loosen up a little bit. I'm starting to see more shades to the characters. They do start out very cookie cutter. I don't know that they're going to hold up with how excellent the Black Eagles characters are, and I'm happy to recruit. I want my Black Eagles characters back, so I'm recruiting them all. As many as I can get
Nice.
anyway. I'm gonna try to. Yeah, so I'm not sure that they're gonna hold up, but I am still, and here's the thing about this game, I'm still doing everything, Tim. I'm still going through the monastery every time I get a chance to explore. I still talk to everybody because they say little things that are different. It's like I'm filling in a large painting that I only filled in a third of, and now I'm filling in little spots right now, and I expect to get some big spots later on after the time skip. So it's still really, really interesting to me. I'm still doing most of the little things. I'm much quicker at them now. I know exactly what I'm doing. And the post game allows you to, while you don't get like all the items that you had or anything like that, you do get these things called renown points. And renown points could be spent in your first playthrough on these statues that increase like how your stats are raised. So it'll give you bonuses to, like, when you wanted to raise people's skills, it would also attach a bonus to that, so you could raise skills even faster. And then there were certain, you would unlock, the more points you got, you would spend them, and you couldn't, you can't unlock all the these the that these statues have to offer in your first playthrough. It's just not possible to get that many renown points, I don't believe. But they let you keep all the renown points that you unlocked, and they let you keep all the things that you unlocked via these statues. All the bonuses. So everybody's gaining XP faster. Everybody's gaining their skills faster than they did in the last game. I can move them up to higher classes much quicker than I could before. And it also allowed me to spend renown points on the skills that I used to have. So I made my professor level A plus. I maxed it out immediately because that allowed me to have more activity points, get more money right off the bat than I ever got in the first game. So I'm automatically like way more set up. I can do things so much quicker now because it lets you spend that, you keep this renown point thing. So I'm progressing through the game quicker. I think it's probably, he's probably going to be accurate again. It's probably going to be 60 hours for my next playthrough or less, depending on how much I really want to do. I don't think I'm going to have to. Right now, I'm leveling up so quickly. I'm finding, because I can do more battles since I spent these renown points on my professor level, that I'm leveling up much faster than I thought I was going to, and I'm way ahead at the moment of everybody. Like, I walk through these battles. I can just sit there and do nothing and let them attack like one character, and he'll probably live. They'll probably just like destroy everybody on his own. So I'm leveling up much quicker, and I'm finding I don't need to do the auxiliary battles this time around, so I can almost concentrate just on the story stuff, and still my guys will be ready, I feel, by the end, because
That's amazing.
they're just upgrading quicker. So I can trim
So,
a lot of the fat out of my first playthrough. They don't make you have to go through that again if you don't want to. And I enjoyed it the first time around, but I can see the benefits of cutting it out now because now I'm just more interested in seeing how things play out.
yeah, that's amazing. It encourages more playthroughs. It encourages you to go back and play through every house as
Yeah.
it gradually gets faster and faster, as you have to do less of the just grinding, which is fun the first time round, but by the time it's like any JRPG, you pick up a new version of Pokemon, like you don't necessarily want to have to train up a million monsters again, right? You just pick your party the second time go through and you just blast through the game. So I really appreciate that. So I guess closing thoughts, now that you've completed the main narrative with one house and you've gotten that playthrough out of the way, and you said it held your interest, but I've got to know, like, rating wise, how does this rank up if you had to give it out of 5 stars, which is what we do on Goomba Stomp? Where does it rank?
Yeah, or at least it's what we used to do. We kind of stopped our ratings for now, but because we had a plugin that wasn't working. But so the ratings are
Behind
gone
the
now.
curtain.
You're gonna have to read through the whole review now to find out whether we like something. So here's the thing. When I first picked up this game, and like I said, I was wary of it after I saw the E3 presentation, and I was kind of confused because I'm not a guy that plays a lot of RPGs, and I definitely hadn't played any Fire Emblem games to any great length other than Heroes, which is its own thing. And I thought this was going to be a game that I bought. Maybe I'd only play through some of it and get some time out of it and be satisfied and trade it back in. Or maybe I'd beat it and I'd trade it back in but not be interested in doing the other three houses. Well, Tim, I'll be going through all three houses in this. I'm not saying I'm going to do it back to back to back because there are some other games coming out these months, but I am now keeping this game. And any time that there is a gap that I used to fill with a game like Hollow Knight and just do a replay of Hollow Knight, I will now be spending my time playing Fire Emblem Three Houses and going through all of those houses. To me, this is instantly shot up to my game of the year. I have a hard time. I'm not, there's some great games that are set to release over the course of this year, so I'm not going to lock anything in right now. But they're going to have to hit a high bar for them to beat out. This is going to be when I vote in Gumba-san's Game of the Year list. At the end of the year. This is probably going to be my number one. And I have a hard time seeing that. It's at least going to be two. Maybe something beats it, but I highly doubt it. This is a 5 out of 5 for me. This is like, I know it's not going to be perfect for everybody. This is not a perfect game, but my gut reaction to it when this is the quickest 80 hours I've ever put into a game. I felt like it blew by. It was a treat for 80 hours. So. Yeah, this for me, this is going to be hard to beat for Game of the Year for me. I know that that's might be overhyping it for some. Not everybody's gonna love it as much as I did, but I can't recommend it based on my experience as a Fire Emblem rookie. I can't recommend this enough. As someone who doesn't even really not that into RPGs, JRPGs, I'm not into anime. I'm not into a lot of the stuff, the lengthy conversations that these people have. Like, I'd usually skip, like Skyrim, I didn't listen to whatever was going on. I would skip through all that stuff. There have been story-based games that I just, like, blow through the dialogue and I don't even pay attention halfway through the game because I don't care anymore. And not with this one. I listened to the voice acting of every single thing. I didn't even cycle through the dialogue just by reading it first, because obviously you can read it faster than they can say it, and you have that option. Nope, I sat there, Tim, and I listened to every single line spoke by every single character.
Wow. Oh, so it must be spoken pretty well then, voice acted well.
I thought it was voice acted very well. Yeah.
Perfect.
And the
Okay.
characters are so interesting that it made them more alive for me.
Man, this I am like trying my hardest not to spend any money, especially with all the games that are coming out so soon. But man, you are really selling this thing. So if you like character-driven games, if you aren't even that into RPGs, you've heard it from Patrick. It's a stellar game. Everyone is saying the same as Patrick.
I want to
And
say one more thing because
go
I
for it.
know I focus so much on story. I just want to to not scare anybody off who like really, really, really doesn't want to or is worried that this is all story. There are a ton of battles to do, a ton, and especially post time skip, you're going to find yourself mostly battling. So for people who just like would rather this be a straight up action or a strategy game, don't worry. There's boatloads of battles to do. Okay, I'm done.
Okay, so go pick it up for the Switch right now. But also keep in mind that there are a ton of indie games coming to the Switch. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to go over the Indie World Showcase, so don't go anywhere.
What are you accomplishing with that little stunt? It's like you're trying to get me killed, you fool! Well, it's fine. After all, if you don't know the value of your own life, you're not going to protect it very well, are you? Of course not. Well then, I guess it's up to me to guide you from now on, right? You can call me Sothis. But I'm also known as the Beginning.
Welcome back to NXpress. We're at our main event, a discussion of the Indie World Showcase that occurred on August 19th, 2019, where a bunch of new indie games were touted coming to the Switch later this year, and some are already out, which I always love. There are quite a few of those surprises of, oh, it's out, get it now. And I've just got to say, thank you, Nintendo. It's always the most fun. I don't know what it is about that drop style, but they did it with Hollow Knight. Back at, well, not this E3, but the E3 before last.
Yep.
And like, it just makes it so much more exciting. I was like, I can wait in lines and play a new game. A new to me, I should say. I don't know if it was out before that. Probably it was. But it's always so fun, so exciting. So we got a couple more of those. We could go through every single game, but why don't we pick some of the highlights? And maybe you need a quick refresher, but the first one that was shown off that I thought was initially pretty interesting was Risk of Rain 2. And I never played the original Risk of Rain, but just this trailer alone, it was showing off some co-op gameplay, which I'm, of course, all about being the co-op guy on our site. But it looks like an action multiplayer looter shooter sort of deal. And right. This one looked pretty fun to me. I don't know. You didn't really get to see any gameplay, but the cinematic trailer was good.
Yeah, that was what... I mean, there were a couple of games that only had cinematic game trailers, if I remember right. And, yeah, for me, I mean, I didn't play Risk of Rain, but I remember hearing good things about it. And so they're obviously touting it in this. I'm sure there are a lot of people looking forward to this. I am not one of them. I need to see some more gameplay. I guess I should go look up. I should go look up what Risk of Rain kind of involved. But I remember hearing a lot of good things about it. The actual trailer didn't really pique my interest because I guess in this indie showcase and as in all Nintendo Directs, for the most part, I only care about seeing the gameplay stuff, especially with indies, though. It's one thing if they show off a cinematic for Luigi's Mansion, because I just know it's going to be awesome. I'm glad they're announcing it. But it's another thing for an indie game. Like, indie games don't have the hype for me that that something like Metroid Prime 4 showing a logo of that would have. So
and understandably.
I can be content at an E3 when they announce Metroid Prime 4 with a logo. For an indie game, I need to see something. So for me, that one didn't quite catch my interest, but I'm going to go look up Risk of Rain and see kind of what it's all about.
Well, it's roguelike. It's always been multiplayer, it looks like, but still good cinematic and kind of an exciting way to start the show. The next game shown off was a little bit weirder, Eastward, which looks like it's an action-adventure role-playing game. I don't know if this one spoke to you, but it looked a little bit more generic to me.
Yeah, that's kind of how I would describe it. It looked like, okay, it's an action-adventure role-playing game. Like,
yep.
It could be all right if you're into that. That's not the kind of game that I'm necessarily looking for at the moment, but who knows? The visual style wasn't quite... It didn't grab my eye, and I guess that's kind of what I want. If I'm going to play a game like that, there needs to be something that sticks out for me particularly. Not that it was, you know, anything wrong with it. It just didn't... It's all going to be a personal choice, and for me, it didn't necessarily grab my attention.
Yeah, did the crazy art style, the cartoon art style of Freedom Finger grab you at all?
Freedom... I don't like the cartoony art styles. I hate to be like the guy that's getting all negative now after I was so positive before. But, yeah, I'm not big on Toon stuff. I like the Cuphead look. That's about as... But that was so out there that... plus, it was old-fashioned, and I really like... It was super old-fashioned. But, yeah, no, that one did not get... I'm going to cut to the chase. There was really only one game that really grabbed me. There were a couple that I was vaguely interested in, but only one game really grabbed me. But it was not that one.
Yeah, so I guess the next couple didn't really speak to me. At one point while I was watching this, and this is just for like full disclosure for everyone out there, I was like, man, this game looks like a ripoff of Super Hot. And it was just Super Hot. just, oh, never mind.
So that one had my interest. Because I remember seeing when Super Hot first came out, I remember thinking it looked really cool. And I kind of liked the idea of the slow motion bullet dodging. Like you basically just have, you have to figure out how to get through these things. And you can only shoot in full motion, but you can otherwise run around in slow motion, right? So you have to figure out exactly when you're going to take somebody out. And you got to be able to take them out in a way that won't get you shot. Because once you speed things up back to normal speed, you're not going to be able to dodge bullets anymore. So I liked that idea, and I'm curious. And of course, it's out right now. I have not picked it up because I've been Fire Embleming, but that one at least looks interesting. I like the idea of it. Visually, so distinct too. Looks very cool.
Yeah, undoubtedly. So the one that really stuck out to me, the one that I think caught my interest the most, was Skillboy.
Really?
And yeah, it just I liked the art style and kind of the general tone of it. It was kind of an action adventure platformer looking game that had a very cartoony, almost like a 2D meets 3D, I think is how they described it, but I just really liked the look of it. I kind of liked the darker imagery that goes along with it, but it's still very fun and cutesy. I don't know. I thought this one looked pretty cool and it looked engaging. It looked like it was going to be fun.
I like the aesthetic. It's almost like a Paper Mario-esque.
Some people have been saying sort of like Paper Mario had
Yeah.
a, yeah.
Not completely, but I mean, because it's pixelated and stuff, but it has, there are some flat things. I don't know. It has that kind of pop-up book or Paper Mario-esque kind of thing. It's not totally like that, but it's sort of along those lines of being stylized. Yeah, I thought it was like, I mean, it seemed cutesy to me, and it's possibly something that could, with that, it's gonna all depend on sort of the characters and the quirkiness. How quirky can they really get? It's the world itself can't draw me in. Like I like the visual aesthetic, but it's only gonna last for a little while. It has to have
Yeah.
something more, I think. So I would need to see like a lot of quirkiness out of that game in order
I
for it to
mean,
be.
when you're told, but when the big, like, center of the game, the central quirk, the hook, if you will, is like swapping out body parts to get new abilities. I think that's fun. I like that it's not new weapons necessarily. It's like you're a skeleton and you need new body parts. That I was like, yep. That's me. That's for me. So that's the one that spoke to me. I'm curious, which one were you most interested in?
Tourist.
Really?
The Shin'n Games thing.
Okay, so
And
this one.
the style of game isn't necessarily what it seems to be kind of like just sort of a random, I don't even know if you call it an adventure game. What would you call this type of game?
Arcade-y?
Arcade? No, because you're just kind of walking around and you're doing these things on an island, right?
But
Sometimes
you're
you're
like,
scuba diving. He went into an arcade and it looks like there's a bunch of mini games that you can play in that
that's
arcade.
what like most of the trailer was, honestly, was you're doing a bunch of different games within the game, and so that's kind of what I was taking the game to be, but it looks like the rest of it is just walking around an island.
And exploring. Yeah, I think you explore a lot in this. And I'm not entirely sure what the purpose of any of this is. Like I even went and read the description afterwards on their website, and it sounds like it's kind of a laid back experience that you just kind of like, here's this island, there's a lot of cool things to do on this island, just walk around and go find them. You know, you can go scuba diving, you can go into that arcade if you want, you can go check out other places, and I don't know, but I really like the way it looks, and it's such a huge departure for that company who makes the fast racing Neo games, you know, stuff like that. I mean, I know they did their balance game. I can't remember what Art of Balance, I believe it was called, which is a puzzle game, a physics-based puzzle game. But this just seems like a huge departure. It seems so mellow, and they are always capable of producing incredible visuals. Like they get the most out of Nintendo systems. Like they make some really, really good looking stuff. And so I am curious. Because I love this. It gave me shades of like if you put Minecraft inside Link's Awakening, the new Link's
Yeah, I get
Awakening
that.
game. So,
It's got like better shading, so to speak, than Minecraft, because Minecraft's intentionally very simplistic.
yeah.
but it's still kind of got that cubist look going. So yeah, I get what you're saying about the visual style. It's definitely distinct. It's catching for sure.
I want to see more, but this is the game that piqued my interest the most. Mostly, a lot of it was because it was a lot of gameplay, but it was a lot of mystery as to what exactly you're going to be doing. So that's what has me so curious about it. I love the look of it, and I'm kind of curious to find out what you get to do when you're exploring this world. So I imagine as the game gets closer to release, we'll find out more about it. But that was the one that caught my eye. I was like, what is going on here? This looks really appealing in some ways. And if it's going to be like a cool, laid-back sort of experience along the same feeling you get from playing an Animal Crossing or something, where you're going around this place and you're discovering new things and you're kind of interacting with the world, I can see that being pretty cool. So yeah, that's the one that grabbed me.
Yeah. So a couple of these I've actually played at different places, including Fogs, which was part of the sizzle reel towards the end, where it's a co-op game where each player plays the upper torso of a conjoined dog. And it's very, very goofy. It's just like one of those funny physics games, and I had a lot of fun testing this out at PAX last year. So I'd say keep an eye on that if you have something that you want to play with. And then of course the big surprise at the end of the show, you knew they were holding off something, and it is Ori and the Blind Forest, which I reviewed. I think it was on Pop Optic, honestly. That's how long ago that was.
That game came out a while ago, yeah. No,
Yeah.
was it for Pop-Up? God, it was it
Maybe
that
it's
long ago?
I cannot remember, but in any case, it's a sensational platformer. It had issues that have since been ironed out, just with segments of the map that you couldn't go back to after you'd progressed the story to a certain point, and they thankfully fixed that. That was just like a very early issue, but honestly, just one of the most fun, artfully, perfectly rendered games I've ever played. It's so beautiful the whole way through. The art style is very gripping, but at the same time, it is like a very fast-paced action platformer in a way that I was incredibly satisfied with, beyond most platformers. I tend to like platformers, but this one is a cut above the rest. And it kind of came out of nowhere and was a big hit for Xbox. And it's really cool to see them sharing yet another title.
Yeah, I like the idea of that. I wonder what it means for Microsoft that they're sort of going to become a publisher and they're going to push their brands that way. I'm not sure how that's going to work out, but it's cool that we get it for sure.
After thinking about this for some time, and this is not the point of the show, but it bears discussing to some extent. I think it's really interesting that maybe it's the most profitable to let a game be a platform seller or at least a highlight on a platform exclusively for a while. But then when it's made that money for Xbox already, why not make some additional money by putting it on a different platform, right? Like, I honestly am like, more developers should probably start doing this. Not Nintendo, because that's what they do, right? Is they produce the best first party titles, and that's what sells their consoles.
Yeah, and this
But
is an indie game. It's not, I mean, it's sort of an indie. It's not really, but
it's not putting Halo on the Switch,
yeah,
right?
exactly. It's a smaller game, and like if Nintendo wanted to throw Box Boy onto somebody else's console, I don't think that would be so jarring as having obviously Mario or Zelda on another console.
Right.
But
So
so let me ask you about this game, because okay, so I get that this game looks gorgeous, right? I've seen gameplay of this, and at first when the game came out, I thought it was going to be like a Metroidvania, kind of a chill out, maybe this is sort of a compliment to Hollow Knight in some ways. But the way you've described it and the way I've seen gameplay is there's a lot of action platforming in this. Would you say that this is definitely like not so much, is it more of a Metroidvania type game or is it more of a action platformer?
So it has Metroidvania elements in that you're like collecting different power-ups as you go through and steadily building up your character. But the gameplay feels a little bit more unique. It doesn't feel necessarily in the exact same vein is Castlevania or Metroid, which are a little bit more, they're a little slower, a little bit more methodical. This is kind of about quick action, and it's very fast-paced in a very satisfying, fluid way.
Okay.
So I wouldn't say it's like the most cool, what's the word I'm looking for? It's not like trigger happy. It doesn't require to be twitch quick, but it does require some responsiveness, and it plays exceedingly well. They managed to get a very satisfying level of responsiveness for the character. So there the comparison bears making, like, it makes sense to make that comparison to Metroidvanias in general, because there is the collecting aspect. There is the exploration of it, like you'll find hidden power-ups if you bother to explore, but it's a little bit, it's 10 hours as opposed to 20 to 30. It's not as slow when it comes to the combat most of the time. There are no bosses. You're not going to come up against Mother Brain. I don't want to spoil too much, but there are some sequences where rather than have a boss fight, you'll like run away from an enemy. So
I've always hated those, by the way, and that's what gives me pause about a game like this. I
if I
hate
could
those sequences in games.
and that was one of my biggest gripes with the entire game, was that no one likes those.
Nobody, does anybody like those? I would like to know because they had one in Samus Returns, the 3DS Metroid game, and honestly, I was like, why, Nintendo? Why are you ruining a Metroidvania, which the whole purpose is to explore and backtrack and be methodical, with this thing that's going to cause me that intentionally, by the way, because you know what they always do in those, Tim? They intentionally throw in obstacles that will cause you to react and die so that you'll have to replay it over and over and over again so that you learn the pattern, right? And for a Metroid game like Samus Returns, that kills the vibe. Like, what is the point of that? Because now you've just taken me out of the experience of the fluidness of exploring this world and thrown in this action set piece where you've put traps in front of me that I could never anticipate, and I'll die, and now I'll have to go back and know that that trap is there.
And luckily in Ori, they're few and far between. I think there's maybe a maximum of three, and they tend to be short, and one of them is just the final set piece to kind of wrap up the game, where you're challenged to go through a bunch of puzzles that you've encountered throughout the entirety of the game and do them in quick succession. And luckily, it's not too bad or so overly frustrating. But I'm trying to remember, again, I played this a long time ago. I want to say that if you do mess up, there are checkpoints, but I could be wrong.
From what I've seen, I don't believe there
But
are,
maybe they're
because I think
not.
you're supposed to be, earn the satisfaction of going through the whole thing in one go. So I don't believe there are checkpoints, unless the final one happens in stages or something.
And I can't quite remember, but that was just about my only gripe, besides the you couldn't backtrack at a certain point. But again, they patched that eventually. So beyond that, I would say this is pretty much like the cream of the crop for action platformers.
Okay. Yeah, I have a little pause about it. I'm not certain that I'm going to pick this one up. If you'd asked me when this game came out, I would have gotten it immediately. The more I've seen of it, the more I'm wondering whether I personally will enjoy that style. Like, there are a couple of things that just there are certain things that will annoy me to the point where it'll scare me off a game, even if the rest of the game is brilliant. I'll be like, I don't really don't want to encounter that. I don't really, there's nothing that could make the game worth it. Like, Samus Returns, the first time I tried playing that game, I just stopped after the that kind of stage where something's chasing you. I just stopped because I felt like it was insulting me for throwing in something so dumb. And yeah, I actually got through it, then I stopped out of principle. Like, yeah, I can beat this, but now you've ruined the game for me, and now I'm not going to play the rest of you, Samus Returns. And then I went back to it, played through it again, and got bored. But I never beat that game. I think that's honestly, I'm not sure why it was so highly praised. But yeah, I don't know. We'll see about Ori. It's possible. I don't know. We'll see what else is coming. There's so many games coming out that I'm not sure Ori's going to have a space. I know that a lot of people love that game, and there's going to be some hype for it, and I'm sure it's going to do really well on the Switch, especially with the portable stuff. I'm not sure it's for me though. So there that for me, like that ended the thing, ended the presentation on kind of a okay. I know other people like this, but I doubt I'll be picking Ori up.
See, and it's a game I've already played. I don't feel the need to go play it again necessarily, but I'm still extremely excited that it's on the Switch. It just makes the Switch that more stand out of a console. And with Cuphead and now Ori, looks like Xbox is being fairly generous, and I really, really like the relationship that these two companies seem to have right now. I don't know what constitutes it being the definitive edition, but yeah, definitely check it out if you haven't played it, or even if you have. It could be really, really cool to see what happens on the Switch with it. Was there any game that you were kind of, not to be mean, but were there any games that you watched and you were kind of like, really? I'm just curious, because there was one big one for me.
Oh God. I mean, as with a lot of indie games, that tends to happen for me. I'm not sure. I always find it kind of fascinating, but I approach it more from like a clinical view of, with a lot of their indie game showcases, I'm like, I wonder what made them pick this and decide to showcase it. That happens to me a lot with a lot of indie games, and that definitely happened on this one. With a lot of games, I can't point to any one particular where I that stood out for me though.
Okay, so, which is probably kinder of you than it is of me, but I'm still gonna call someone out just because Skater XL, just less fun Tony Hawk.
Yeah, but there isn't a Tony Hawk on Switch, so there's kind of a
There's a
need for, or not a need, but there's a hole that they can fill.
can't, but it's not gonna be the same thing. This looks like it's way more down to earth. Which kind of defeats the purpose. Tony Hawk was allowing people that might be able to skateboard or may have no interest in skateboarding and giving them a fun sports alternative game. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. It's like Punch Out, boxers. You need to be a
Punch
boxer
Out
to enjoy
or
Punch Out, or even Fight Night.
1080 Snowboarding or
Yeah.
Wave, what was Wave Racer? Is that right?
Yeah, Wave Race.
Yeah, it's like. They weren't exactly a sports game, but they were still adjacent. And I feel like, yeah, there is that hole on the Switch that does exist. I just don't know if this is the way to fill it. But also, I'm not asking for more Tony Hawk. Maybe bring the old ones back, but I'm not asking for more.
It's one of those things where I wasn't sure. It looked a little stiff. I'll say
Yeah.
that. The animations, but Tony Hawk kind of looks sort of stiff at times too. But that was, of course, m far earlier generation, so who knows? And I haven't seen the most recent Tony Hawks. I know there have been some within the last 5, 10 years. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, to me, the Tony Hawk games, I am not a fan of them. I played them
Yeah.
back when they came out on, I played them on friends' PlayStations because everybody was really big into those. And it just doesn't appeal to me personally. I just so for me, this was a game that just simply was filling time for me.
Yeah.
I watched with kind of like in one ear out the other mentality, where I wasn't really paying attention, but I was looking at it, and I just thought, oh, skating game, not for me. Let's just wait and see what they have in the next stuff. But I was, like I say, it looked a little stiff. Not really sure. Whether they're going to create environments that are interesting. No, I didn't see anything that was like, there was, like you said, it was pretty grounded. So there's nothing wacky, no like wacky environments that you were, pulling off crazy moves in. It didn't seem to be a crazy game in any way. And maybe, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but there aren't skating games on the Switch. So if somebody is super into that, maybe there's an audience for it.
Yeah, and to be fair, maybe it stuck out because it is distinct. It's not just a generic pixelated platformer or pixelated RPG, which is maybe a good thing because there were a couple of other games in here that I'm sure just made no impression on me whatsoever because they looked like every other indie game. So
Yes.
maybe I'm being a little harsh on this game, but yeah, to each their own. If there was a different game that you were really into, I'd be interested to hear. Overall, I thought this was a fine indie direct, but not the most thrilling.
Yeah, I'd go with that. You know, that's always tough with indies because, like you said, indie games tend to look a lot alike, and there are so many of them. So many of them. So it's nothing against the developers. Like, I get it. You want to start a video game company, you want to make video games. That's great. It's just that coming from the perspective of the consumer, oh my gosh, there's so many choices, and it's really, really hard to tell a lot of them apart. So when
Well,
that happens, you start to lose a little interest. Like, they don't, it doesn't wow me to see a lot of these indie presentations because unless something's super distinct, it's hard for me to get hyped up for it.
and if you're like me, you're also just like, well, I'll wait for reviews and see if it's worth my time
And
and my
that's what I
money.
do. Yep.
Exactly. So,
There's probably some great games. There are great games out there. There are great indie games out there, but it's hard to tell from a trailer a lot of the time.
yeah, and I'm sure if you played some of these original games, there were several sequels. Even Trine is getting a fourth one, so it must be doing pretty well. It's just never, not something I ever played. So hopefully, these games turn out great, and there's the next, I don't know, Hollow Knight in the midst of all of these,
There
but.
will never be another Hollow Knight. Well, until Hollow Knight Silksong. In which case, then there will actually be another Hollow
There will literally be another one.
Knight.
Yeah. Anyway, that does it for the Indie World Showcase. We're going to take a break when we come back. The Sinking City, so don't go anywhere. Welcome back to NXpress. We're at our final segment, a review of The Sinking City, out now on the Switch. Actually, it's been out for 2 months. 2 months, not one, two. Came out in late June to the Switch and all other platforms. I should, for full disclosure, we got a review for the Xbox One, so that's what I played this on. So I cannot speak to the quality of the game on the Switch. So keep in mind that visually, some of the game might look a little less than stellar compared to the other consoles. That's the way it goes with a lot of these games. But beyond that, I can happily say that The Sinking City might be worth your time, depending on what you're looking for in a game. This kind of fits into that unhappy middle ground where it's generally pretty good. I actually had a lot of gripes with the game, and I feel like most of my review sounded not negative, but like sort of nitpicky and tending towards negative, which usually you would expect a negative review. But as I kind of alluded to at the end of the review, for whatever reason, I still had a good time with it, maybe because of the source material, because I'm a pretty big Lovecraftian fan, maybe just because of how well it's handled, how authentic it feels, how it feels like it like deserves a spot in Lovecraftian lore. I found that this was a worthwhile venture into the world of Lovecraft. So I, man, it's, again, it's been a while since I played this game. But let me just go out and say that, like Patrick, with not being a veteran in RPGs or in Fire Emblem in particular, I am not like a big detective game guy, so I don't know how original this is. But in general, I found that the game's continual captivating investigation mechanics and the core gameplay, which revolves around going to a location, searching for clues, getting a bigger piece of the narrative, and then making inferences from that. I found that really, really engaging, even though it was very repetitive and was sometimes a little bit marred by some overly vague hints. I'm not even going to call them hints, just kind of like leaving you out to dangle. I really enjoyed that side of the game, and I found it captivating throughout maybe the 10, 15, 20 hours I put into the game.
Wow, I didn't realize it was that long.
Yeah, it can kind of be as long as you want. There's like a lot of side quests that you can go on. There were a lot more missions than I was initially expecting, which was honestly good. I honestly had a surprisingly great time when they were like, "Oh yeah, now you need to go out to this side of the town. Now go to the opposite side of the town." While I found the fast travel a little bit cumbersome and travel in general was kind of clunky and annoying, for whatever reason, it was worthwhile because of all the districts in the game felt unique and distinct. It always felt worth my time to go and investigate further or go see a different side of town to figure out another piece of the overall puzzle. So that kept me engaged with the game throughout my entire time with it. What was definitely lacking was the combat mechanics. So I found them super clunky. I compared them to the original Resident Evil, and I did not mean that as a compliment. I meant that as like it's jarring and felt like it belongs in the 90s. But luckily, it's not the emphasis of the game. More of the game is about solving the mystery. It's about getting deep into the lore of the game, into the lore of Lovecraft, while still telling a distinct story that's kind of a twist on Lovecraft. I don't want to get into that because the game does its own thing in like a very welcoming way, while still even like openly dealing with some of the more problematic sides of Lovecraft. That they even put a warning at the beginning of the game that this is going to deal with some of the ethnic, racial, and other minority issues that Lovecraft dealt with back in the day. And so in that way, it's kind of an authentic depiction of a time. And I found that really, really inviting. And I felt like it was more, Patrick, maybe you'll agree, maybe you'll disagree. I find it kind of troubling when people try to either push aside the issues with a writer or they try to make them a focal point. And like you hear all these statements, oh, Lovecraft was racist, oh, Disney was racist. And I'm like, maybe compared to our standards, but taken in the light of the time, that was probably pretty common. So Lovecraft dealing with mixed race marriages, that was probably like a pressing concern to his way of life, which was a privileged white male in the early 1900s. So, like, yes, sometimes these stories read as problematic, but I think it's better to look at them and try to understand them in the light of when they existed. I don't know how you feel about that.
Let me just say, I don't know. I don't care. I'll just go right and say it. I think all of that stuff's a load of BS. When people start going on about how something's problematic, even that was written 100 years ago, I don't even like saying he was a privileged white guy. I think that term is utterly useless. Like, he was in one culture, and this is how his culture thought about other cultures. That is something, by the way, that has been happening for thousands of years all over the world, where other cultures did not like other cultures.
Well,
Like, barbarians was a Greek word for not Greek. It
yeah.
meant that they thought less of everybody. Lots of cultures thought that way about outside cultures, and they didn't like getting together. This is like before towns really communicated with each other. They didn't. I don't want to get into a whole big thing, but I'm just gonna say before towns communicated with each other, they got used to their way of life, and when they finally ran into another town that had another way of life, they didn't like it. So I'll recommend Gone with the Wind. I recommend great stuff is great stuff is great stuff. Whether it's reading Huckleberry Finn or whatever, if you're gonna tell me that there's some modern day attitude that doesn't like jive with the attitudes and life of something 150, 200, 300, 400, 2,000 years ago, if you don't want to read Homer because of how they treated people back in the days of ancient Greeks 2,000 years ago, I think you got a problem. But I'm not going to try to tackle that with you. Like you don't really get history, I think. You learn from these things and you think, and you're supposed to read that and see it as sort of a window into the past. Like, interesting, this is how they operated. Anyway, I take a more clinical approach to stuff like that. I never, ever, ever, ever crosses my mind that would ever bother me.
So, and I feel like that's probably the best way to take these things, especially since, again, like Lovecraft existed in a time before the Civil Rights
Yeah,
Movement. So,
yeah,
all of them,
exactly.
for all of them.
Guess what?
So,
This stuff happened.
but I do, it's tangential, sure, but I do feel like it's appropriate in the context of this game because this game doesn't necessarily glance over those issues. It sometimes brings them up. And it deals with them directly in a way that I think is very respectable. And I actually really appreciated that because I felt like the game felt very, very rooted in the time in which it was set, the 1920s. So like you also get a different like discussion of prohibition, and it all felt very age appropriate, and that made the setting more viable. In spite of, the elder gods that are waking up and destroying everything. So, like,
It's
that
historical.
exactly. I mean, it happened.
That
It's like,
happened, people. We fought the Elder Gods. They took it out of your history books.
yeah, they just wiped it from our minds.
But Lovecraft, he told the truth.
Yeah, Lovecraft was reality. So, but the real star here, the thing that makes this game worth playing again, like, the investigations are really, really engaging. I enjoyed it the whole way through, even though they got kind of repetitive and sometimes it was a little obtuse. The combat felt dated. The world traversal was irksome, but the world was worth seeing. I found the setting super, super well created. I feel like they just had ambiance up the yin yang. Everything felt extremely nautical appropriately. It genuinely felt like you were walking through an ocean-soaked street the whole way through. And it was dark, it was gloomy, it was foggy. And I genuinely loved that side of the game. It felt fun to see the world. And I don't think that enough games truly capture that just right. I feel like sometimes you have a game like Breath of the Wild that just like it completely is worth investigating every inch of that map. And you did that, Patrick. And
Yes.
while this doesn't necessarily have that same level of depth, I mean, it's of course a smaller title, there were moments when I would be investigating an old warehouse, killed a couple of monsters, and would just happen upon a strange and unexplainable ritual site, like out of the blue.
Sounds like
And
Skyrim.
yeah, and I was like, I'm so glad.
Lots of ritual sites in that game.
And like one of the ones that I distinctly remember, I remember walking into this room that was like behind a hidden panel and underneath a building. You were like under the basement even, and there was like a doll in the middle of this like ritual site. And I was like, well, this is unnerving. I don't think I want to be here anymore. So of course I went and clicked on everything. And I was like, this is great. This level of detail, this level of attention to worldcraft, I felt like made the game worth playing. So while in the end, I couldn't give it a perfect review because some of the game felt a little dated, I think that it really, really felt like a Lovecraft world worth investigating. And I don't, that was a play on words that I didn't intend, but it
That's a tagline.
Yeah, I should have thought of that when I was writing the review. So I ended with the thought that though approachable for the uninitiated, There's more to be enjoyed for those that know the source material, from the street names to the quotes to the references to ancient unknowable horrors. Though anchored by some of its key mechanics, The Sinking City is one of the best Lovecraftian titles in recent memory. So the more you know, the better it'll be, but it is still inviting for those that don't know Lovecraft. This might be a good way to get into Lovecraft, who knows, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say if any of that sounds any bit inviting, maybe look into it if you've got the time for it.
Yeah, I mean, see, as long as I'm curious just to know about, like, what was it exactly about the detective mechanics that like the solving, did you feel like you were really solving things, or that the game, I think with a lot of detective games, they kind of feed you.
They solve little, themselves.
Yeah. They sort of like give you the options and stuff, and you only have to pick from three options, and it's often pretty obvious. And did you feel like you were solving things?
There were times, some of the more obtuse puzzles, you are reading something and then taking all of the key elements and then plugging them in elsewhere. And in those instances, it did feel like I was solving something. The majority of these investigations tend to be more collect all the clues, unlock a like vision of past events where you get like these stationary depictions of some of the events that occurred, and then you sort them into like the logical chronological progression, right? Mm-hmm. And then you conclude with this kind of interesting mechanic where you make inferences based on everything that you just deduced. So, like, to some extent, it does solve itself. To some extent, you get to plug in the information and then come to your own conclusions.
Okay.
And I felt like there was some liberties there. You could make inferences, and those felt earned. So, I don't know, it's hard. There were times where I felt like I really was solving something. Most of the time, I would say it's kind of solving itself, but you're kind of making those same conclusions as the character is. So at no point did it feel too overly handed it to you, because you're looking at those clues already, and in your mind, you're putting the pieces together already. So it never felt too overly insulting when the game would just kind of come to a conclusion that you had already deduced earlier on.
And tell you, like, where have I seen that symbol before? You know, stuff like that, where it's basically telling you, hey, this is important.
No, it's more like, find five clues in this area, right? Once you have all the five clues, you can kind of look at the events, and by then you're making the inferences. And so you're basically telling the character what you just came to as the player, and I felt like that worked well. It was a good way to go about things.
Okay.
It naturally teased out events so that it felt like, while kind of obvious at times, it felt like you had just solved something.
Hmm. I mean, the atmosphere all looks really good. I'm not a big Lovecraft guy. I think I read, was it In the Mountains of Madness?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I read that one, and I was, you know, it wasn't, didn't leave an impression on me. But I like the way this game kind of looks, and you know, it's the sort of thing I could see myself playing purely for the atmosphere alone. Even if I don't get all the references, like, that's okay. It just has kind of a cool vibe to it.
Yeah, and that definitely it made it very distinct. It felt standout. It felt unique. So if you've got time, I would say look into it. Again, not a perfect game. It definitely has its own voice, which is somewhat borrowed from Lovecraft, but it feels very well situated in that lore, in that mythos. So if that, forgive me, if that calls to you, then go ahead and maybe give this a chance. Anyway, enough of the Elder Gods and the Ancient Ones. That does it for our show. Patrick, thank you for joining me this week. Where can we find you online?
You can always find me at GoombaStomp.com, writing about either old movies that people hate, or you know, games. There's been, you know, I've written some Three Houses stuff, or one. Well, I've written a preview for it, and then obviously something since. I talked about how cool it is that Three Houses kind of forces you to manage time, and time has consequences. So there's an article about why that's really cool, or why I think that's cool. But yeah, otherwise, writing about movies, we've got a lot of movie stuff coming up. There's going to be some big games, of course, coming out pretty soon, like Astral Chain, so you can look forward to, I'll probably write something up on that as well. And you can find me online at Sordid Cinema.
Yeah. And I am Tim Mason. You can find me at The Freemason, MAISON on Twitter. Check out my work on Goomba Stomp. Check out my review of The Sinking City, my ancient review 2 months ago. Check out my other show, Game Boys, all about co-op and multiplayer gaming. If you like this show, you could do us a huge favor. Go to Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, wherever you happen to listen. Drop us a rating and a review. It opens up a ton of doors. Gets us review codes, access to events, and helps us reach more and more gamers and Nintendo fans. And that's what we really want, right? Is a community full of Nintendo fans who can rally with us when we're excited for things like a trailer for Metroid Prime 4. Anyway, thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you more next week with all things Nintendo. See you then.